The whole place is constantly bathed in the flame, and where the flame of purity penetrates, all imperfections are dissolved. Serapis Bey wants us to use the flame for all sorts of mechanical things, such as tuning a piano or tuning up a motor. We eventually have to learn to operate everything on this earth by drawing the energies of the rays into service. That is how everything was accomplished in the laborless days before the laggards came. Those were the days of genuine God abundance, when all necessities were drawn directly from the atmosphere by invocation. There was no economic system or money exchange of any kind, for the people used whatever cosmic ray power they needed, and then gave thanks to the Creator for providing his children with his own omnipresent energy. After the laggards had contaminated the Earth's atmosphere with their emanations of selfishness and rebellion, negatively refusing to trust in the God power of the flames, their self-generated poison spread round the Earth and formed a thick blanket of a murky grey sticky substance which to this day still clings to every object, even to individual atoms. It also penetrates within the shell of the atom and clogs the space between the electrons, thereby slowing down the revolution of both electrons and atom. This in turn, affects the tempo of livingness of everything on the globe. Minerals, vegetation, and animal bodies. Before the laggards came, human brain tissue was sunshine yellow in color. The color of the golden light of illumination. After the laggards infected the atmosphere with their emotional frenzies of hatred, resentment and spite, the beautiful yellow brain tissue became contaminated with the astral debris and gradually, down through the centuries, as the clogged atoms revolved more and more slowly, human perception became dulled and the brain tissue itself took on the murky gray color of astral maya. Today people pridefully boast of their gray matter. Certainly a condition of which no mortal need be proud. As human brain tissue became more and more clogged, it lost all normal sensitivity and would no longer register the higher vibrations or respond to sights and sounds from the subtle etheric worlds which interpenetrate the physical. Remember that the early root races had magnetized and anchored subtle matter within the physical, thus spiritualizing the very soil of the planet and raising the vibrations of sticks and stones, meadows and streams, trees and flowers. These first people could see and hear on all planes, and for them there was no barrier between the tangible and intangible. But after the laggards came, all that sensitivity was gradually lost. As the brain tissue slowly turned from yellow to gray, we all became infected people and we lost even the memory of our source, the memory of those days of divine glory when we first emerged as white fire beings, and individualized as twin rays, sparks of flashing splendor in our robes of light, glowing with the heart love of Alpha and Omega. Once the memory of our source was gone, our capacity to register other subtle contacts vanished. We became helpless. Imbruted, degenerate, for we had no inherent knowledge of how to accomplish anything without the aid of the Father within. And we could not remember how to invoke his aid. It was then that the Cosmic Council assembled and decided to dissolve the planet. It was then that Sanat Kumura, in his wonderful, magnificent gesture of godly sacrifice, volunteered to come to the Earth, to help us and guide us and teach us, and to stay with his self-appointed task until the last weary pilgrim had found his way home. Sanat Kumara could not overrule our free will and set us back immediately upon the path. It was by misusing our free will and turning our backs on the perfection of the Father, that we had plunged ourselves into this evolutionary morass. Therefore, we had to learn to use our free will correctly, that is, we had to learn to make a correct choice through trial and error methods. Sanat Kumara could have told us which was right and which was wrong and we could have followed him like blind sheep, but that would have made us into robots. Adepts never use such methods in even the smallest instances, for well they know that dictatorship robs people of any opportunities to exert their own strength to extricate themselves from a difficulty. Yet if we look around us today, it can well be seen that much of the karma which lay so heavily upon us in ancient Lemuria is still with us. Some of the simplest lessons we have not learned, we have failed to profit by many of Sanat Kumara's simple examples. The whole world writhes in agony and responds to vibrations of pain, leading to further pain. Despite what we like to term modern progress, it is in very recent years that virtually the entire world has been engulfed in dictatorship in one form or another. But this could not have happened had petty tyranny not first started in the home, in the school and above all, in the church. And this discordant rhythm, this vibratory response to pain, the desire to inflict pain on others, this sadism has come down to the world over 19 million years. This is the karma which is still with us and which must now be transmuted within a matter of a few years before the planet spirals into an orbit of higher vibrations. For in the cosmic order of things, the planet itself must now move forward regardless of whether or not the population can stand the high vibratory rate of God's love for his children. That is the individual test that will come to each person in the near future. Can you, or can you not, live in peace and brotherhood with your fellowmen? Can you, or can you not, free yourself from the desire to inflict pain on yourself and on others? Can you give up all pain, especially the pain of death and taxes? When Sanat Kumara started to prepare us for this day which is now at its dawning, he could only suggest ways and means. He could not use coercion. He provided us with adept teachers from other planets to show us the way. And it was up to us to learn the score when and if we could. Obviously, we had to begin at the bottom in our classroom work, so the training was made as simple as possible. We were to go out and dig in the soil, much as children playing in a sandbox. Down through the centuries, the dark forces, working through the limited minds of theologians who tampered with the scriptural writings, have tried to make this seem like a punishment. They have recorded the event with an awful pronouncement. You must earn your bread by the sweat of your brow. But it was not a punishment. It was the only opportunity that could be offered to persons so heavily burdened with karma that they did not know right from wrong. The teachers were there as group leaders, there beside us to show us how to earn our bread. They taught us agriculture, architecture, and homemaking tasks such as building fires, cooking foods, weaving and stitching. They taught us how to bathe our bodies and bind up our wounds, for now we were always fighting with each other and hurting each other. They taught us how to cultivate herbs that would alleviate the pain in our contaminated bodies. They could not teach us how to use the beneficent rays again and bring about instant manifestation, for we were slow learners now. We had lost all sensitivity because now our brains were choked and clogged with that horrible murky gray astral stuff. Since we could not use the rays, we were forced to use our muscles instead. It was brutal. And it was stupid and foolish to pay such a price. And for what? For the ignominious emotional pleasure of sympathizing with a lot of lazy, ignorant laggards who could not even keep up with their evolutionary homework on their own planets. But now it is over. We have awakened to truth. Or at least tens of thousands of us have awakened and responded to the call that is resounding through the galaxy. The call for servers of the light to restore the vineyard of the Lord on planet Earth. It is springtime in the vineyard now and many souls are still sleeping in their accustomed darkness. But soon, very soon, the light will reach their inner consciousness. They will stir in their sleep, they will listen to the message of their own beating hearts beating out the rhythm of life eternal. Soon, very soon, the vineyard will be alive and bright and shining with livingness, and the sleeping ones will unfold like blossoms in the warm summer sunshine. Those of us who have already awakened to truth have taken a long, long look at our stupidity, our foolishness. We decided to be foolish no longer. Thousands upon thousands began to serve the light. Tons upon tons of karma have been transmuted daily with the aid of the rays. A sufficient amount of imprisoned energy had been released by 1957 to liberate Sanat Kumara from his voluntary exile on Earth and permit him to return to his home on Venus. At the same time, enough karma had been lifted by 1957 to permit the angelic hosts to begin anew their work of straightening the axis of the Earth. Before the end of 1958, they had made the final adjustment. Lord Michael, mighty prince of the archangels, had stated that an adjustment of 45 degrees was required to bring the Earth's axis into the line required by galactic measurement. This bending of the axis and the resultant eccentric orbit of the Earth were caused entirely by the weight of karma on the planet. So the great task of Sanat Kumara has been successful. He has returned home to Venus. Although he will still guide us as a cosmic regent, his position as Lord of the World has now been turned over to Gautama, formerly our Buddha. Gautama will continue the work of arousing our divine sensitivity, of guiding our feet along the path that leads back to our galactic source, Alpha and Omega. We are still limping and still weary, but we can feel our God strength stirring within us once more. We are learning to use the rays again, though awkwardly. But we must watch ourselves constantly because the old rhythm, so ancient and so wrong, is still extremely powerful. It can so easily pull us back, turn us aside from our one-pointed goal that leads steadily upward, up there, among the stars. Constantly we must remind our unaccustomed lower bodies of the new and better way of doing things. We must keep reminding our physical body that it can do nothing of itself. It is the Father within it that doeth the works. It is the Father who lovingly supplies the constant flow of energy that beats our hearts and keeps alive our individual life flame within each heart. Itself a tiny replica of the great sacred threefold flame which beats the sun heart of the solar system, the galaxy, the cosmos. As white fire beings we were given this gift of the flame straight from the heart of Alpha and Omega. We were made in their image and likeness for all eternity. Within each beating heart today the image is still clear and perfect as the Father in heaven is perfect. The outer form of the physical body may be ugly or beautiful, diseased or in health, but the inner flame in the heart remains ever the same as the great central sun of the galaxy from whence it came. True, the replica is tiny for it was only a spark, but in the sight of God the great and the small are equal in potency. God is everywhere and God is all, indivisible. The spark is equal to the flame. The spark is God. Knowing this, the flame within our heart becomes the comfort flame, the blazing pillar of the Father's strength, forever doing his works within us if we will allow him to have his way. But if we inject our little free will into the situation and insist upon having our own way, then the Father can do nothing. He cannot even interfere with our foolishness. But once we become acquainted with the comfort flame within us, life takes on a new meaning. Feeling this buoyant sense of livingness flowing through us limitlessly, we need not cringe when we are told that we must all individually transmute the phony man-made powers we have handed over to a delusion, a spectre called death. We need not tremble with fear when we are told that we must all, individually, transmute our karma and make our ascension, not in a spaceship, but in our own force field. We need not feel timid or bashful when we are told that we must one and all stand before Serapis Bay, just as Jesus and Mary did 2,000 years ago. Using the rays, we can obtain straight knowledge. Through straight knowing we will know, without anyone telling us, that we must all voluntarily and of our own free will come to terms with our own recalcitrant natures so that we may freely and gladly participate in the training offered at Luxor. And this temple is the focus of only the fourth ray. We must go into all the temples and learn to use all seven rays. We must each, individually, make exactly the same demonstration that Jesus made in overcoming death, although it is assuredly not required or desired that we be physically crucified. But neither can we go on as now, growing old and weary and sick, and then shedding our physical body as a tree sheds its leaves. That process is correct for a tree because it is inherent in the nature of a tree. But it is not correct for an evolving God endowed with free will. Each individual must learn to transmute all his physical, etheric, emotional and mental imperfections, and then make his ascension in freedom away from the gravitational pull of the Earth, into the light ways of space. That is the simple secret of freedom from gravity. An individual who is burdened with untransmuted karma is a sick person, an infected person who constantly gives off poisonous emanations into the atmosphere. Since virtually every person on this planet has been sick with karma for millions of years, It was a tremendous cosmic gesture of compassion and mercy on the part of the cosmic hierarchy to maintain this hospital planet of Earth. Here is a spot in their universe where those who vibrate to pain can be visited by wise physicians like Jesus and thousands of other adepts, and now by the space people. For in the final analysis, each space person, no matter what his role in the liberation of this planet, is basically a physician, ministering to our vibratory rates, raising our frequencies from expressions of hate to expressions of love. The space people, one and all, are here to help us to scientifically transmute our karma and heal ourselves through the use of the violet fire. This is not in any sense a mystical process which will lead us into ecstasies of sentimentality and give us that holier-than-thou feeling. These feelings simply indicate the presence of a serious karmic infection. They do not indicate healing of any kind whatsoever. They simply mean that the sufferer is bogged down in pride. When we are truly healed, scientifically healed through transmutation of karma, we can prove that fact to ourselves by raising the vibrations of our purified physical bodies and ascending from the gravitational pull of the Earth. This is not the ordinary levitation of the misguided psychic or medium. Those unfortunate individuals usually have no control over levitation, nor do they have any control over the wagging tongues that love to prattle about the mystical and the psychic. The space people can move freely from star to star or simply remain in the etheric realms because they have gone through the ascension initiation. There is no untransmuted karma within them that can be held by gravity. They do not need to use mechanical spaceships, for they can travel freely, protected by their own force fields. But when they come into the contaminated atmosphere of the Earth for the purpose of working and teaching, they must of necessity protect themselves with certain devices, just as a diver would prepare to use oxygen if he anticipated an extended stay underwater. This does not apply to the higher adepts, but they rarely mingle with the public, coming only to Shambler, the Grand Teton, or some similar retreat. The value of a mechanical spaceship should not be overestimated, either here on the Earth or outside the Earth. It is a convenience, a device, but it will not, in itself, give any individual the true freedom of the solar systems or galaxies. Moreover, not all spaceships are mechanical. For even though they may carry dozens of people and are true spaceships, they can be formed by a group for a certain purpose and need not contain any mechanisms. They might better be understood as organic in nature, or at least better understood in that sense by our limited Earth minds. During the year of 1957, thousands of Earth people gazed at the passage of a magnificent comet as it sailed through the skies and swung close to the Earth. It was first sighted by two Belgian astronomers, Arend and Roland, and it became known as the Arend-Roland comet. But the poet Wordsworth, a devotee of the sacred flame, long ago correctly defined comets as the diaphanous vestments of some passing plenipotentiary of heaven's farthest kingdom. These efforts to assist us by actually bringing their light to us is the reason why all space people and spaceships visit the Earth, or at least the upper special regions around the Earth. For we cannot, because of our untransmuted karma, go to them at the present time. Now, on this Earth, we have at least one man, Otis T. Carr of Baltimore, Maryland, who states that he has solved the problems connected with building spaceships and he is prepared to manufacture them upon order. He claims that these 44 ships will fly safely anywhere in our atmosphere, to the Moon, and to Venus, Mars or other planets in our solar system. The ships need no fuel as they generate electricity from the atmosphere as they fly. However, Mr. Carr has discovered that if the ships are to fly into outer space, the passengers must be prepared to undergo an instant of transmutation or transition when they go into the etheric realms. Mr. Carr understands that this can be a spiritual experience, but he believes that for those who are spiritually unprepared, the impact might have a shattering effect upon the physical body. Mr. Carr is 100% correct. In fact, he is so right that recently no less a person than El Moria, Shaman of the First Ray, stated that no Earth person in an unascended body would be permitted the freedom of the cosmic highways, A person with an unascended body is a person who is carrying around in his atoms a heavy load of untransmuted karma. El Moria also stated that an individual with an ascended body could, of course, travel the cosmic highways freely at any time they are open. But a person with an ascended body does not need a spaceship for his travels, although it might be convenient in some instances. This does not mean that Mr. Carr's ships should not be built and used around the Earth to replace all present types of aircraft, since they need no fuel. It does not mean that the ships could not be used for outer space travel by those who have made their ascension, but who have volunteered to work here on Earth in an ordinary physical body. Such individuals can instantaneously raise their physical vibrations to meet outer space vibrations, and there will be no discomfort in the process, but only the glory of a heavenly experience. So now that we can have spaceships built in Baltimore, 45 Maryland, at any time we wish, we must ask ourselves a few serious questions before we decide to take off for Venus. We must first ask ourselves if the Venusians would welcome us. They most certainly would not permit us to set foot on their planet so long as we are enslaved by karma. When they extend to us the hand of friendship, it only means that they are willing to come here to the Earth and teach us how to be free. In other words, the Earth people as a whole now have a cosmic opportunity to reap their reward for the tremendous sacrifice made by our third root race people when they received and welcomed the laggards. From the beginning of the trouble on Earth, the Venusians have never stopped trying to help us, and they have had unlimited assistance from numberless solar systems and galaxies. Sanat Kumara took the first step toward our eventual liberation, even though it was a giant step which covered 18.5 million years of effort. At this point the Venusians are not going to give up the struggle to liberate us, but neither do they intend to have us running tourist spaceships to their planet, laden with persons who have not bothered to transmute their karma. The Venusians want no poisonous emanations on their planet, and we are invited to keep our stench of hatred, violence and ugliness right here at home until we have learned the art and science of deodorizing. Remember that Lady Venus is the goddess of beauty in this solar system. When we have learned to utilize the rays, and when we have become open-minded enough to study the teachings offered by the Chuans of the rays in the many retreats right here on this planet, then, and only then, should we start dreaming of transferring our home to Venus. Naturally no one can be blamed for desiring to escape from the Earth so 46 long as it is in its present condition. And to get it out of its present condition, and restore it to its original state which existed before the laggards came, we must have help from the space people. They are trained in handling and transmuting troubled conditions. We have not even the faintest notion of where to start. In fact, the majority of people think they are living a normal life and are not even aware that they are in difficulty. When we are able to travel the cosmic light ways, we will know it, and we can prove it scientifically right here on Earth. We do not need to get sensational and start off on some madcap expedition in an attempt to explore outer space. Outer space has been explored thoroughly. If we want to know anything about it, we can ask the people who explored it. The space people themselves, and they are right here among us. What is this true human freedom which we are seeking? Freedom for man comes to him as a result of his using God-free energy in its natural free way. God energy in its pure form flows into man heartbeat by heartbeat. As the pure electrons are released by the sacred threefold flame within the heart, they enter the bloodstream. As they enter, they are immediately qualified or stamped with the pattern of the individual. They can be qualified with love or they can be misqualified with hate. In other words, the electrons, which provide all power, can be used to carry out loving deeds, to think loving thoughts, to speak loving words. Or they can be used in an opposite manner, depending upon the choice we make through the use of our free will. When man misuses this electronic power in performing hateful acts, he misqualifies the energy. In other words, he leaves his stamp of imperfection upon millions of electrons, 47, that flow into his bloodstream. This energy is God energy, and as such it must obey the free will of man, for man is God created as a free being. When man chooses to enslave this free and pure energy, so that it will do his bidding and supply him with power to carry out some questionable enterprise. He thereby enslaves himself. He starts each pure electron on its way through his own bloodstream with a handicap, the weight of his own feeling of discord. The electron itself remains pure, for it is God energy and can know no impurity. But as it whirls on its course, it collects around itself a shell of impure matter, the same murky grey astral matter that the laggards brought to Earth. As it takes its appointed place with other electrons and forms an atom, the sticky substance clings, and soon the revolution of the electrons within the atom is slowed by the clogging, then the revolution of the atom itself is slowed, and in addition, the atom collects the same astral substance on its outer shell, adding further weight. The resulting rate of electronic revolutions, plus atomic revolutions, taken as a whole in a man's physical, etheric, emotional and mental bodies, constitute what is known as his state of consciousness or his vibratory note. If his electrons and atoms are evolving slowly, he is not only subject to disease, but he is subject to ugly delusions such as death. He begins to feel old age creeping on, and in his limited understanding, he assumes that death is not far away. He feels fearful, bereft and alone. He cannot understand who he is or why he is here. He has no purpose in accord with the divine plan. He is, in short, a materialist, weighed down by his own burdens of hate which he carries right within his own atoms. He tends to be separative in relation to his God and his 48 fellow men because he is usually quite charmed by the amount of astral debris he has accumulated in his atomic structure. The weight of the misqualified energy he is using places him under the delusion that the rioting force within gives him power. He throws his weight around, as the popular saying goes. He likes to give orders, put people in their place, clamp down on this situation or that, and in general act like a big shot. If he happens to be a scientist seeking to ferret out the secrets of atomic power, he can only react according to the limitations he has imposed upon his own atomic structure. He therefore, seeks to enslave the atom, just as he has enslaved his own atoms that he lives with each day. He can think of atomic power only in terms of fission and fusion. He wants to split the atom, to tear it apart by brute force, to strip it bare as one would strip the skin off an orange. His way is the way of hate, of fear, of snickering smugness. The individual who is separated from his source by this barrier of astral debris within his four lower bodies, works with the rays and the flames. He forms a close friendship with the seven great Elohim who built this planet, and with the seven mighty archangels and their angelic hosts who guard the planet and aid all persons who ask for angelic assistance. He reasons that if the Elohim constructed the planet, then he must come to an understanding with these mighty builders. He must try to learn their techniques. He must try to follow their way. Their way is the way of love. Therefore his way must be the way of love. If he observes the work of the fission fusion scientists, he understands that they have 49 brought all humanity to the verge of disaster with their way of hate, of fear, of black magic. He understands that, while this planet was yet a paradise, before the laggards came, the light within the atom was released in beauty, in peace, and in all the mighty strength of the One. He knows that this way of truth must once more shine upon the minds of all men everywhere before man can release himself into freedom, before he can ascend to his home star. He knows that man can accomplish nothing in his bereft state of loneliness because he feels so far from his Creator. He knows that every individual must someday accept the great gift of God, the violet fire of transmutation. He knows that someday, sometime, someplace, each individual must visualize that flame sweeping through and through each atom in his four lower bodies, transmuting all electronic energy which he himself has misqualified down through countless ages of embodiments, individual by individual, until 10 billion souls have been counted. This transmuting process must go on, atom by atom, electron by electron, until all humans on this planet emerge into freedom's light, and the planet itself enters its new orbit as Freedom's Star. For that is the name written in the Book of Life for planet Earth. This is the program for the Aquarian Age. Part 3. the end of man's crucifixion. It has been stated by the spiritual hierarchy of this planet that had humanity been wise enough and strong enough and pure enough to have grasped the significance of the ascension of Jesus 2,000 years ago, that millions of souls would have made their ascension during the Piscean Age.